We can't cook an egg. We can't flip an egg. We can't get pancakes off the griddle.
Be kind, not nice. Being nice is somebody makes a mistake, you don't correct it because you're trying to be nice. That's a bad sign. You want to be kind, meaning you got to go and talk to them and say, hey, I understand you made this mistake. What happened? Run me through it and try to prevent it from happening again.
In my mind, if you're not saying it's great, then there's something that's wrong. But when somebody tells me it's good in the restaurant, I'm like, good? That's not acceptable. I want you to be a follower. I want you to be a fan. I want you to rave about the quality of the experience at the Wildflower, and good's not going to cut it.
I'm excited to have Luis Bazile, the founder of Wildflower. Wildflower isn't just a restaurant. It was built on quality, community, and care, a true success story in the restaurant space. Luis took Wildflower from a single location in just under $1 million to a whopping 16 locations with an AUV of $3.3 million. Recently, he transitioned ownership to a new international group, and today we're going to discuss how he scaled the business, how he started, built a loyal following, and then how he prepared the brand for acquisition. So, Luis, thank you for joining us. Tell us how you got started.
My wife and I moved to Arizona in June of 1994, and I had been recruited to run a small little coffee company here. And I like to say the courtship was great, but the marriage was horrible. And 5 months later, I was let go. And quite frankly, I was heartbroken. That moment forward, I decided that I really didn't want to work for anyone again. And so I took some time and I looked at the market in Arizona. My wife and I, Tracy, decided that we were going to stay in Arizona, and we saw a real need for two things. One is it was really no quality hard crusted bread in Arizona back in 1994. And having grown up in a large Italian household, bread is an essential part of almost every meal. It surely is an essential part when we're eating pasta. And so the second thing that I realized was that there were really no quality sandwiches in Arizona, like, you know, unique sandwiches. Of course, they had sandwiches, but they just weren't that interesting. And so the original concept for the Wildflower was we were going to make this great bread, and then we were going to make these interesting sandwiches. And that's where we started. And customers showed up. Back then we called them customers. We transitioned at some point to calling them guests. And, you know, that whole part of the story is that a customer is really a very transactional word, and a guest is a much more inviting word. And it really speaks more to providing outstanding hospitality when you consider somebody a guest versus a customer. And we made that switch back in like 2017 from customer to guest. So the Wildflower opens up its doors and people show up.
Amazing. So actually, let me pause real quick here. So the first one obviously was very difficult to open up, it sounds like, which, you know, those are the challenges that all entrepreneurs deal with. You said you got fired, for lack of a better word. I want to be very realistic, because I too got fired. We shared that story from Best Buy, and that was my last job. And it just kind of got pushed into this entrepreneurship. It sounds like exact same thing happened to you. You got fired, and then your entrepreneur side of things kind of started flourishing. So you opened the first one. It sounds like it did really well. Then walk us through how you decided, and when did you decide to open the second one? Because going from zero to one is very difficult, but how was the transition from one to two to three?
After the first one opens and people actually show up, I quickly start looking for locations. Now, the key piece there is that we had used most of our money that we had to both build the house we live in today and to start the Wildflower. So I didn't really have any money to build these other restaurants, but that didn't stop me from going out there and promoting the brand and actually signing two leases. So Very quickly, probably by 1990. So we opened in November of 96. I'd have to go back and look, but I bet you we signed those leases in 97. Okay. To open two locations. And now I'm like, well, I got to go find the money. And I thought that was going to be the easy part, but that was incredibly challenging. Okay. Ultimately, we found a group that invested in us. And we got these two restaurants open. Okay. So the second one was located in Tempe, Arizona. And I came from this diner or luncheonette environment where we used to serve breakfast at my dad's restaurant. And I'm like, there's really no affordable breakfast places except for quick service or fast food back then. And this is well before sort of the boozy brunch places started and all of that. So we decided that we were going to do breakfast, okay? And at first, when we first opened in Tempe, I remember the first Sunday we were open, and breakfast was, I call it a retailer's sixth sense. So I'm driving up to the store. We probably opened at 7 o'clock in the morning. I think I get there at like 8:30 or 9 on a Sunday, and I just knew something was wrong. And I honestly thought about just getting in my car and driving home, right? But of course, that would have been incredibly poor leadership. So I walk in and it's just a mess. We can't cook an egg. We can't flip an egg. We can't get pancakes off the griddle. And of course, back then there were no digital comp cards or anything. So I took all the either $5 or $10 bills we had in the restaurant, and a bunch of these handwritten comp cards. And I went up to all the guests that were waiting for breakfast, and I explained who I was. And I said, listen, we're not going to be able to make your breakfast this morning. I know that's disappointing. If you want a soup, a salad, or a sandwich, we can definitely do that, because I know we know how to do that. And I promise you, by next weekend, we'll have this all figured out. Here's your money back. Here's a comp card. Okay. And most people were very, very kind about it. And ultimately, on Monday morning, I called my equipment supplier and I found out all these interesting things about how they make griddles that have no stick tops. And I'm like, well, why didn't you tell me that a year ago? And, you know, we air freighted stuff in, but by the following weekend, we had it figured out, and we were then able to cook breakfast, basically. And so, you know, that was a real challenge, but it was also an incredible validation of what we were doing, because people were so excited about what we were offering. And so Tempe took off immediately with the connection to the bookstore. And then in that same year, in September, we opened up our third location on the west side of Phoenix in Deer Valley Town Center. And we're making all of this bread. So we were what I like to call backward integrated. And one of our competitive advantages was, or is to this day, is that we make our own bread. Okay. And back then we were only making bread for ourselves. Eventually that business has now grown into two businesses, one where we make bread for the Wildflower restaurants, and two where we sell bread to other hotels, restaurants, golf clubs as a wholesale bread supplier. When you think about businesses today, and you think about even consumers today, everybody wants everything immediately. And to have the patience and to have the commitment to really honoring this sort of old world tradition of making bread in a 3-day process is just really not that common.
1,000%. And I think I was just in Rome not too long ago, a couple of months ago, and you're absolutely right. I think it's all the I wanted now things that gets added is the problem, not the actual food itself, right? But over there, I typically eat once a day here in the States. And over there, I was eating probably 5-6 times a day. I would go to one restaurant, have a pasta, and then 3 hours later, go to another one, have another pasta, and go to another one, have pizza. And it was just fantastic. And I felt amazing. But also, I guess I was walking a lot too. So, but yeah, I agree with you. I think that old tradition is gone. And now, I'm paying a lot of attention to what you're saying. Like, I'm choosing my restaurants based on the quality. Is it organic? Do they have, how are they sourcing it, etc.? So I'm paying a lot more attention to that stuff intentionally and deciding and choosing to spend more money, go to a restaurant that does things that way versus just, whatever, quickly made
And I
served,
think,
etc.
I think it's really, shoot, I didn't mean to step over you there. I think it's really interesting to note that different guests have different priorities, okay? And they value things differently, right? So when you think about the hospitality business, right? There is the atmosphere. So that's like, what does the restaurant look like? What's the music? What's the mood? What's the vibe? And then you've got the hospitality part of it. What's the service level? It doesn't matter whether it's full service, quick service, fast casual. And then you've got the quality of the food. And every consumer, thinks about those things differently. For me personally, I put a very, very high value on the quality of the food. And second for me would be the hospitality. And third would be the ambiance. It doesn't really have to be that pretty for me. If the food's great and the hospitality is warm and welcoming, I'm all in. However, some people value the atmosphere more. Basically, than anything else. And they just want to be in a cool place, whatever they consider cool. And hospitality and food are sort of secondary to them. And so, what makes the restaurant business so challenging or really so invigorating is trying to hit all of those marks because we don't know what each guest or consumer, what their hot button is. And so that's why, at least at the Wildflower, we talk about everything matters because we just don't know what is that particular hot button or what is that idiosyncrasy that that guest really pays attention to that makes them love your brand and not love somebody else. So for some people, it's a bathroom check. If the bathrooms aren't clean, they're not eating there. And so it's, again, it would be awesome. I've talked about this for years. Of course, I'm joking. If every guest had some sort of chip and as they walk through your front door, it would just show above their head, all right, this person cares that their food's hot. This person needs the bathroom to be clean. And you would know exactly what that consumer is looking for. And then you could focus on that.
Well, I think with the new changes coming in, customer data and etc., you may not be too far-fetched. So.
It may be, but it's still, in my mind, regardless of all of the data that we receive, it's still going to be a bit of a crapshoot to figure out what each person wants. So that goes back to this just general thing. Look, easy to articulate. Serve food that's consistent, right? Hot food, hot, cold food, cold. Have a warm and welcoming environment, provide hospitality, and have an ambiance that's spotless, that's clean. Now, that's easy to say, but that's incredibly difficult to execute on a daily basis. And what I think most restaurateurs or people that are operating restaurants forget is that this is every time, every day. And that really is the challenge of the business. How do you get yourself as a leader and the people that work with you to understand that there's really no guest that gets a day off from great hospitality, great food, warm and welcoming environment, spotless restaurant?
So let's drill and double click into that. How do we ensure? Let's take each topic. I think you nailed it. There are three table stakes in any restaurants, and also the challenge is getting all three right every single day. Because you're absolutely right. In fact, I was just at a restaurant that I hadn't been there for a while, went in, and I'm like, oh my God, like, took us about 10 minutes to get seated, and it took us 14 minutes just to get the water on the table. 14 minutes. I was timing it. I was like, oh, this is ridiculous. Had to ask like two, three times, hey, can you get our server? So again, it is extremely difficult to execute some of that, but let's start with the number one thing, products, the food, how to ensure that consistency day in, day out, especially across multiple locations. So you were running 16 units. When it got to 16 units, how did you ensure consistency every single time?
Okay, so I think it starts with having an unwavering commitment to the quality of the food. So that starts with your partners, okay? So look, the restaurant business takes an incredible amount of partnership with lots of different people. The folks that work directly for you, you're in a partnership with them. The person you buy your produce from, or the five people you buy your produce from, you're in a partnership with them. You're in a partnership with your meat purveyor. All of those are partnerships. You're in a partnership with the person that fixes your refrigerated work tables or your air conditioning or your plumber. And all of those people, you have to find partners or suppliers that share your vision. And that only happens when, one, you're willing to articulate your vision to them. Two, you're willing to provide what we call kind versus nice feedback. So the difference between being nice is that's the pleasantries that when somebody asks you how you're doing, they generally aren't really interested in how you're doing. They're just looking for, I'm fine, or I'm having a good day, and walking by. The kind version of how you're doing would be actually letting somebody know that if they're not doing okay, that you're there to listen to whatever it is that is troubling them, or they're having a tough day, or they're having some personal problems. Doesn't mean you're going to be able to fix it for them. But, you know, sometimes just being a good listener is all somebody needs, or a few words of encouragement. So that's sort of this kind versus nice model that we talk a lot about at the Wildflower. So once you establish these partners, it's really around both education. It's education for them, and it's also education for, at the Wildflower, we call our employees breadheads. So it'd be education for the breadheads. And that education is around, we have standards. I like to say that we use the words Wildflower way a lot. Okay, this is the Wildflower way. It's not the only way. It just happens to be our way, okay? And that doesn't mean that we're not open to suggestions from breadheads, suggestions from vendors. However, until we make a change, the way we do it is the way we do it. And we expect everyone to buy into that way. That's the Wildflower way. And if you're so opposed to how we think about the business, or you really disagree with us, as I like to say, this isn't indentured servitude. There is nothing stopping you from just, you know, from leaving. I'm not asking people to leave, but if we're not on the same side, and we're not have a common understanding of what quality means, what serving food that to standard means, then it's too hard of a business to be fighting that battle internally while you're trying to, you know, execute to a guest on a daily basis. You've got lots of competition, and all of those things, you know, really, really need to be in sync.
That's just, it's so packed and it's so full of value, because I too am dealing with the same things that you're discussing now. In fact, be kind, not nice. So we say, look, being nice is somebody makes a mistake, you don't correct it because you're trying to be nice. That's a bad sign. You want to be kind, meaning you got to go and talk to them and say, hey, I understand you made this mistake. What happened? Run me through it and try to prevent it from happening again. Or just simply coaching people out that just don't see your vision. Like, you can't fight that fight internally. I've had to do that over the last 12 months, and it is just draining. It's not just draining to the founder, but also to the other staff that are there. So I think you nailed it. And what's impressive is, I'm a technology guy, you're a restaurateur, and we're solving the same problems. So business at the end of the day is business, regardless whether you're technology or restaurants.
I completely agree. Listen, I think that over half of the country, at least in the United States, at one point has had some job in a restaurant at one point in their career. Okay. And what's really, quite frankly, we don't as an industry get credit for providing this incredible training ground for future workforce. And again, I'm not suggesting that everybody's had the most positive experience working at a restaurant. There are surely restaurant companies out there or individual restaurants where things just aren't great. And those are the stories that too often get told versus the stories about what actually a great company looks like. So when you think about it, when you work in a restaurant, you learn teamwork. You learn multitasking. You learn verbal skills. You learn how to read people's body language. You could learn actually how to cook. You might never have known anything like that. You learn how to clean. You learn how to be on time. You learn how to communicate. Those are all skills that are they're given to you if you're willing to accept them, and they're given to you for free because that's what we need you to do in order to be a successful, in Wildflower's case, breadhead. And ultimately, those are skills that you will use in any industry, whether it's technology, if it's manufacturing, if it's some form of retail, if you become a doctor or a psychologist, whatever you use, things that I just described that are taught by being an employee, or in the Wildflower's case, breadhead, are things that you'll take with you, that you can carry with you forever.
So now let's get into service. How do we deal with that? That's a little bit more complicated. It's a little bit more tricky, but how do you deliver on service every time?
Okay. So, I mean, look, there's, first of all, everyone needs to understand in the organization that we are in the hospitality business. So if you don't like saying hi, hello, thank you, welcome, then you're not cut out for that business, okay? And so there's a difference between taking a young adult or a teenager who might be a little shy or introverted and showing them that they have skills where they can communicate versus just somebody that just doesn't like to do that, okay? And for people that don't like to do that, that's fine. Not everyone's going to be a hospitalian, and practice that. Their place just isn't in this particular industry. There's plenty of jobs for them. It just isn't here. Okay. So it starts with, having an incredibly strong, culture. And again, in my mind, I use standard about what guest service is so that everybody understands what it is. Okay. And everybody understands the expectation. So at the Wildflower, we talk about it in the sense of we do whatever it takes. Okay. I'm always fascinated by a experience where a restaurant or a retailer will not go above and beyond to save a guest experience. Like it's mind numbing to me because the reality is, yes, I understand that the Wildflower is at a different price point than let's say a full service steakhouse. But I can tell you that I've gone to plenty of expensive steakhouses, and it is rare if the steak is overcooked, they'll cook you another one, but they hardly ever will just say, don't worry about it, you don't have to pay for that tonight. Okay? And it's fascinating to me that they just don't do that. I understand that you can't do that for every customer, right? So look, if you're overcooking every steak, then you just have operational problems, okay? But if you're a busy restaurant and you have one or two steaks that are overcooked that night, you can still recook it. And, you know, the typical thing might be they do nothing. They just recook it and they say they're sorry. Or maybe they offer a dessert to you, but it is, I can count on less than five fingers the time where a full service restaurant has said, you know what, that steak's on us. We're so sorry. So this whole do whatever it takes mentality is permeated throughout the wildflower culture. And I believe, or we believe, in trusting our breadheads. And so every breadhead is empowered to do whatever it takes. Now, whether they can read the body language, read the signs of the guests, and do that remains to be seen. And that's where, you know, they're always told or they're always encouraged to come get a manager. But we talk a lot about reading people's body language. Listen, if you're eating at a wildflower and you're eating in the restaurant and you've just moved your food around, right? Everyone else is eating and you haven't eaten any of your food, something's wrong. Now, you might not like it. Maybe you're not feeling well, doesn't taste the way you thought it was going to be. Those are all signs that we need to do something about that. And we teach that, right? And so we have a thing that we call the brand promise. And the wildflower brand promise is an unwritten contract between us and the guest, okay? And it talks about the quality of the food. It talks about the ambiance. It talks about the hospitality, the service. And one of our key metrics is that when you eat in a wildflower for here, we're supposed to ask you within two bites of your meal, how is everything? And, you know, in my mind, if you're not saying it's great, then there's something that's wrong. Okay. Now I understand that lots of people aren't as passionate about food as I am, but when somebody tells me it's good in the restaurant, I'm like, good. That's not acceptable. I want you to be a follower. I want you to be a fan. I want you to rave about the quality of the experience at the wildflower, and good's not going to cut it. That leadership, that rhetoric, and that talking about that is part of delivering hospitality.
Amazing. Thank you again for joining us. It's been really valuable, and we appreciate having you on.